Today we're traveling back in time to Taiwan in the late 1950s. And as our guide, we have an ROC government English language publication, a booklet called 101 Questions About Taiwan. It was published in July of 1959.
The Taiwan History Podcast, Formosa Files, is made possible through the generous sponsorship of the Frank C. Chen Foundation.
Formosa Files.
Nice book cover. An attractive woman farmer holding a turkey. Eric, do you think that's a shout out to that wonderful local dish, jiai turkey rice?
Jiai turkey rice? The world famous dish from where you live? No. The turkey's probably a symbol of U.S. ROC ties, of American aid to Taiwan.
You're probably right. Jiai turkey rice was still in its early years of fame then.
Yes, and this publication is from 1959, but largely describing things as they were the year before, 1958. So the Chinese nationalists had controlled the island since 1945. But Chiang Kai-shek and his KMT government had only fled there 9 years earlier, right, in 1949.
Mm-hmm. And 1958 was a big year here. There was the Second Taiwan Strait Crisis, which involved the PRC bombarding ROC-controlled islands near the Chinese coast, and the United States got involved. There was talk of using tactical nukes, high tensions.
And this period was a high point in terms of American military personnel stationed here.
Yes, and that relates to a question in this book, 101 Questions About Taiwan. How many foreigners reside in Taiwan?
The answer they give is, quote, approximately 13,000 foreigners reside on this island. 5/6 of these are Americans, including diplomatic and military personnel with their dependents, besides some 1,300 businessmen and missionaries.
Probably a slight undercounting. I don't know what the figure is today, and officially no military here, not since 1979. Speaking of population, here's another question. What is the population of Taiwan?
Well, by the end of 1958, the civilian population in Taiwan stood at exactly 10,039,435. I like the specificity. This figure, however, does not include members of the, you know, the U.S. Armed Forces.
Oh, why be so specific if you're not including a large number of people? Anyway,
yeah, it's funny.
Taiwan's population today is 23.5 million. And going back to this booklet, it says Taipei has a population of 820,000. Today, that number is several million.
Interesting note about Taipei. It says it, quote, is the provisional capital of the republic. It was also the seat of the provincial government of Taiwan until November 1956, when, in line with the civil defense dispersion plan, the provincial government moved to a new location near Taichung, end quote.
Provisional and provincial. Very confusing, Eric.
Yes. So provisional, temporary. Taipei was the temporary capital of the Republic of China, you know, until their expected return to the mainland.
Right. And provincial refers to Taiwan being a mere province of all of China. And they actually built this new provincial capital in central Taiwan.
Yeah, it's called Zhongxing New Village. It was a planned city in a rural area in Nantou County, and no longer does it hold official province capital status.
Next question. Are there many foreign correspondents in Taiwan?
Answer, quote, all major news agencies of the world are represented in Taiwan, such as the AP, UPI, Reuters, and AFP. The New York Times and the leading Japanese newspapers maintain personnel here, as do some magazines such as Newsweek and the leading photo agencies. Radio and TV networks such as NBC and CBS also keep correspondents in Taiwan. However, only 13 of the news media are represented by foreigners, while 12 are represented by Chinese correspondents and stringers, end quote.
That's pretty good coverage. I wonder how that compares with today.
Well, interestingly, these last couple of years have seen a huge exodus of reporters from China to Taiwan. I think CNN is here now, a whole bunch of, because, you know, you can't really report truthfully from Beijing much anymore. So, yeah, we've seen a whole bunch more here now.
Absolutely, yes. There's a question about print media. How many newspapers and magazines are there in Taiwan?
Okay, there are 675 magazines, including weeklies, semi-monthlies, monthlies, and quarterlies. And there are 32 newspapers in Taiwan, with a combined daily circulation of 500,000, or one copy of a newspaper to every 20 persons. Three are published daily in English, the China Post, the China News, and the Express News. The latter two are mimeographed.
Mimeographed. That's a duplicating machine. Quite primitive pre-photocopier days equipment, and it suggests a small circulation. I've not heard of the Express News, have you?
No, that's funny. I've never come across something called the Express News. No. Today we have only one actual English, you know, print newspaper. You can hold it in your hand. It's the Taipei Times.
Mm-hmm. Next question. What radio and TV facilities do you have in Taiwan?
Answer, quote, there are no TV facilities as yet in Taiwan. But altogether, 55 radio broadcasting stations are in operation in Taiwan. The largest network of that is the Broadcasting Corporation of China, BCC. I even remember the jingle for that one.
Zhongguang, BCC.
And their main studio is in Taipei. You know, when I was working for ICRT for a short time, we had an office in the same building as the BCC. Anyway, there are 10 other stations scattered throughout the island. Its overseas program, The Voice of Free China, broadcasts to the United States, Northeast and Southeast Asia, and the Middle East in four languages, English, Korean, Japanese, and Arabic, and five Chinese dialects, Mandarin, Cantonese, Swatow, Amoy, and Hakka. Broadcast beamed to the Chinese mainland, bring a message of hope 14 hours a day to the people there. 14, not 24, 14 hours a day.
Yeah. Well, amazing language diversity at that time. You know, Mandarin Chinese was not yet universal across China.
Okay, well, here's the best part, I think, of the answer. Quote, a special Russian language broadcast, 10 hours a day, is aimed at Siberia.
Russian language broadcast to Siberia. Never heard of that before. Incredible. Next question. Since Taiwan is called the beautiful island, what are some of the scenic spots to visit? The answer is too long to quote in full, but in the Taipei area, it suggests Beitou and Yangmingshan, noted for their hot sulfur springs, cherry blossoms, and multicolored azaleas in spring.
Yeah, and back then, didn't they call Yangmingshan Grass Mountain for the most part?
That's right. In the 50s, it changed from Grass Mountain to the new name of Yangmingshan, yeah.
It also describes Danshui as, quote, an interesting old seaport and fisherman's village.
Village, I wish.
Yeah, not anymore. But back then, it was a village with a great sporting facility. Quote, its golf course is said to be one of the finest in the Far East.
The booklet mentions Bitan, or Green Lake, about 7 miles from Taipei. It's ideal for boating, swimming, and fishing. Houseboats and rowboats are available for hire.
Yeah, and today you can get on the Taipei subway and go there directly, and you can paddle around in that little lake.
Pond.
Okay, there are also a pond. There are also shout-outs for Sun Moon Lake, Yushan, Mount Ali, which can be reached by narrow gauge railway from Jiayi and is famous for the sea of clouds that surrounds its peak, and the sacred tree, 3,000 years old, which I think fell in a typhoon not that long ago.
That's right, yes.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
For more natural beauty, there's Taroko Gorge near Hualien. Quote, it may be compared in grandeur and splendor to the Yosemite of California.
Interesting. I don't know if I would compare those two, but okay. Here's another one, quote, a new tourist attraction is the East-West Cross Island Highway, now nearing completion, traversing the Taroko Gorge and the breathtaking central mountain range of Taiwan, end quote.
Beautiful road.
It is.
But from travel, let's switch to sport. Question, what are the principal sports in Taiwan?
Answer, quote, the popular sports are basketball, baseball, and swimming, while there is also widespread interest in track and field, table tennis, golf, soccer, weightlifting, boxing, judo, volleyball, rowing, and football, end quote.
Rowing? Any idea what that's about?
Well, the first thing that comes to mind would be dragon boat races. I saw some practicing on the Love River the other day.
Okay. Or there's that pond we mentioned. They mentioned rowboats.
Yeah, you can still get some rowboats there as well, but mostly they have these like little duck contraptions and you pedal it and it moves and, you know, you take your girlfriend or whatever.
Swans, Eric. Swans. Yeah. Get your birds right.
Okay, here's an interesting piece. Quote, the most promising athlete in Taiwan today is Yang Chuang Guang, 27. Who has twice won the decathlon championship in the Asian Games, came in a close second in the 1958 American decathlon competition, and is considered Asia's brightest hope for the 1960 Olympic Games in Rome.
CK Yang, the Iron Man of Asia, and the decathlon at the 1960 Summer Olympics in Rome. Oh my, what a story that is. One of the great sporting stories of all time.
Yes, we covered that in season 1, episode 20. We re-released it a little earlier this year. And if anybody's out there and has some extra money and wants to make a movie, this is a movie that needs to be made.
Yes, and we don't need to star as the principal characters
in that story.
Okay, changing gears. Taiwan in the late 1950s was poor, but things were improving. It's not yet economic miracle time. But things are getting better. The nation's manufacturing was limited, mostly import substitution rather than being export focused. And the country was still agricultural. It's an agricultural economy. Okay, let's have a look. Here's a question. What are the principal agricultural crops of Taiwan?
Quote, in 1958, Taiwan broke all-time records in the production of rice, sweet potato, peanut, wheat, and soybean, while brown sugar, tea, pineapple, and citrus fruits reached new highs since the last war. Other special crops worth mentioning include banana, citronella oil, and jute.
Jute is a plant harvested for its fiber, but I had to look up citronella oil. Wiki says it's an essential oil obtained from the leaves and stems of different species of lemon grass. The oil is used extensively as a source of perfumery chemicals. So these oils are used extensively in soap, candles, and incense. And I checked another book, also happened to be from 1959, and I learned that, quote, Taiwan is the source of more than 60% of the world's supply of citronella oil. This product is from the oil of grass growing in the hilly regions of North and Central Taiwan.
Yeah, this is very interesting. All these products Taiwan once led the world in, Panama hats, camphor, ship scrapping, very different from the computer chips of today.
Yeah, really different. And it's not that long ago, right?
No. Hmm. You were just a young man in 1958.
Hey. Okay, here's another agricultural question. How important is sugar to the economy of Taiwan?
Quote, sugar is the backbone of Taiwan's economy and the most valuable export of the island. Last year, it brought back over $100 million through sales to Japan, the Middle East, and other countries. This is more than 60% of all foreign exchange earned through export. The government-owned Taiwan Sugar Corporation operates 27 sugar mills, employing directly 18,000 persons. 500,000 people live indirectly on sugar, most of them farmers who plant sugarcane under contract to the Taiwan Sugar Corporation, end quote.
As far as I know, today there's just one sugar mill still operating. That's in central Taiwan, Huwei. Another big export was salt. So, yeah, there's a question on that.
Answer, quote, plenty of it. And more than half of the salt produced is sold abroad, from Malaya to the south to Japan in the north. Using the solar evaporation method, The Taiwan Salt Works operate 6 fields.
I like that using the solar evaporation method. It's an ancient, very low-tech approach to getting salt, right? You just let it evaporate. And it's in stark contrast to this question, is Taiwan doing research in atomic energy?
Quote, the National Tsinghua University, formerly in Beiping, has started research in the peaceful use of atomic energy, and an experimental reactor of the swimming pool type will be installed in its laboratory in Hsinchu in the autumn of 1959.
It would take until the early 1980s until Taiwan was running nuclear reactors.
Yeah, Taiwan, a poor country, developing an expensive technology like nuclear power. Well, you know, in many ways, it was a cover for developing nuclear weapons. Another story we've covered, the very first episode of our season 2, what was it called? Taiwan Nukes versus the CIA.
Mm-hmm. But nuclear power was really seen as being the way forward for energy in the 1950s. The future didn't really play out the way people had hoped.
Yeah, and we also can't forget that Taiwan has no natural gas or petroleum.
Well, it did have a little, at least in the answer to a question in this booklet. Quote, does Taiwan have a petroleum industry? It mentions that they are, quote, working hard to find oil underground. Taiwan has undertaken geological exploration and experimental drilling for a number of years and recently has shifted the efforts from the mountains to West Coast plains. Around 30 wells were drilled in the last 5 years, some producing oil and natural gas.
Yeah, that was false hope. There's zero production today. You know, in general, Taiwan is not blessed with natural resources.
You wouldn't know it from the answer to this question. What are the mineral resources?
Quote, Taiwan produces coal, gold, silver, copper, crude petroleum, natural gas, sulfur, marble, and asbestos.
Oh, one industry which was important then and remains so is fisheries.
Quote, a quarter of a million people earn their living through deep sea, inshore, or coastal fishing and fish culture in Taiwan. The 1958 fishery production was an all-time high. Taiwan began to sell tuna to the United States in 1958. A small-scale whaling operation has also been started at the southernmost tip of the island, end quote.
That's an interesting story. Starting whaling about 120 years after everyone else, yes. Whaling for the post-World War II Japanese market. Turning to manufacturing, there's some material in the booklet about the amazing growth of Taiwan's textile industry.
Mm-hmm. By 1958, it was the second largest industry on the island, next to only food processing, which included sugar refining. That would really indicate how cheap the labor here was, doesn't it?
Yes, it's not much of a boast, is it, to say our second biggest industry is textiles. Here's another question. What other consumer goods are produced in Taiwan?
Answer, a wide range of consumer goods are produced here. In 1958, Taiwan made 93 Jeeps, 30,770 bicycles.
Wait, sorry, how many Jeeps?
93 Jeeps, which hardly seems worth mentioning, does it? You know, putting it in the book, 93 Jeeps.
No, and it's strange to have an odd number like that. It's not even around 100.
Yeah, but there are more respectable numbers for other items. For example, quote, 104,000 electric fans, 60,000 sewing machines, and 6.4 million light bulbs.
Time to get political. How many countries recognize the Republic of China?
This has changed a bit. It says, countries that recognize the Republic of China number 45, of which 42 are members of the United Nations. Outside of the Soviet bloc, only 21 countries extend recognition to the puppet communist regime in Beiping.
Puppet communist regime. Okay. I love it, but it's actually wrong. The CCP had been a puppet of Stalin back in the day, but he died in 1953 and things changed. The USSR and the PRC were currently in the process of having an ugly divorce.
Yeah. Did you notice the use of Beiping? Not Beijing, not Peking, but Beiping.
Right. Beiping, Northern Peace, rather than Beijing, Northern Capital, because Nanjing was the ROC capital. Another political question. Apart from the KMT, or the Nationalist, another name for the KMT, are there other political parties?
Right. This was a time when Taiwanese political parties were not allowed. And here's what the booklet says. Quote, there are the Young China Party, founded in 1923, and the Democratic Socialist Party, founded in 1932. The latter was first known as the National Socialist Party and adopted its present name in 1946. Both enjoy the same legal status as the Kuomintang, end quote.
Did you say National Socialist Party?
Yeah, National Socialist Party. If I'm not mistaken, John, that was the one that a certain Austrian dictator in Germany, that's what he called his party, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. What's the date there that they changed the name?
They changed the name in 1946.
Wow, that's leaving it a bit late, isn't it? Oh, good Lord.
Yeah, like 1 year after that said Austrian person surrendered. But, you know, at least they did change it. And this booklet we're quoting goes on to say that these two parties held various seats. And I suppose we should let listeners know that, okay, in reality, these two parties were not in any way like opposition parties. They were branches of the authorities, if anything, right? I mean,
yeah, just token opposition. Here's a question. How strong are the armed forces of the Republic of China?
Quote, while the exact strength of the Army, Navy, Air Force, and Combined Service Forces is a military secret, the forces are best trained and the best equipped according to any standard. And the morale was never higher, end quote. Yeah.
A related question. What is the average age of the Chinese servicemen? They seem to be a little sensitive here about this question.
Yeah. So it says, quote, far from being an aging army, the average age of the enlisted men in the armed forces is 25 and a half. The ranks of the armed forces are constantly being replaced by new blood, drafted from among the youth of free China. Every physically fit male reaching the age of 21 is eligible for the draft. That makes it sound so nice, you know, like, oh, you're eligible.
Yes. And the winner of the contest is...
Yeah. The draftee serves for a period of 2 years, is then discharged and placed in the reserve. Specialists in the Navy and the Air Force serve for a period of 3 years, end quote.
Next question. How does the Chinese government expect to recover the mainland when its armed forces are greatly outnumbered by the Reds?
I'm surprised they let that question even get into the booklet. They don't really give a good answer, just a long-winded explanation that, quote, communist ideology and methods are contrary to the traditional Chinese way of life and culture. And they're like, you know, oh, they will eventually rise up when the sufferings of the enslaved people have reached a breaking point. When the moment comes, the Republic of China will use all the means at its disposal to go to the aid of the anti-communist forces in restoring freedom to its own people on the mainland, end quote. So quite aspirational.
Yeah, so peasants, rise up and we'll be joining you when things get going.
Yeah, yeah.
Here's one of my favorites from this book of 101 Questions. Do the island-born soldiers share the enthusiasm for the recovery of the mainland?
Oh, wonderful question. Do the island-born soldiers, so do Taiwanese-born soldiers, have the same enthusiasm for the recovery of China, the mainland? Here's the answer, quote, they most certainly do, for they are also Chinese, sharing the same cherished objectives of freedom and democracy and feeling the same sort of kinship to those suffering under communist tyranny on the mainland. They realize that Taiwan is an integral part of China and that their families would not be safe unless the Chinese communist regime is overthrown, end quote.
Wow, hilarious. I mean, obviously the mainland soldiers would be much more motivated to go back to China, to their homes, their family members. And the truth, of course, was that the Taiwanese were not too keen on almost certain death for this project.
Yeah. I'm also interested at why it was 101 questions. I mean, why 101?
I don't know. Looking ahead, they wanted to insult my Taiwan in 100 books. I don't know.
Or they had a premonition of the Taipei 101.
Ah, okay.
Well, John and I are going to stop being ridiculous and speculating nonsense, and we're going to leave off here. Thanks for listening to this interesting but overwrought bunch of answers to some questions from Taiwan in 1958. But it is really cool to see, you know, how far we've come.
Yes, yes. And my favorite question in life is compared to what? So, yeah, Taiwan wasn't that great in 58 or 59, but it was a heck of a lot better than what was happening across the strait.
Agreed. Thanks for listening, and thanks for your support of Formosa Files. I'm Eric Michael Smith.
I'm John Ross. Bye.